like that. Write that down, Fumisai.
I am Klein Japanese.
All right. Has it come out yet, officially?
Actually, it's not going to start until like the first week of April, but they've been doing this press-only sneak preview. So I was able to go there. Mm. And I went there actually twice. You know, you watching a movie once and you get that. And second time, you get really get the details. So so I decided to go there twice. And so I've already watched it twice.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And because it's like a 130-minute film.
Yeah.
You know, two hours and 10 minutes. And actually, it was really too short to cover everything.
There was a lot left out.
Yeah. And see, if you wanted to deal with Bruiser Brody, you know, Bruiser Brody should have some episode, you know, Von Erich's family and Fritz and Brody. And if you cover people like Gino Hernandez, he also died overdosed, right? And people like Chris Adams, he was shot and killed by his best friend, you know, and the movie did not have Chris Von Erich in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They didn't talk about Lance Von Erich either.
Yeah, but actually Lance Von Erich has short, very short, nonverbal role in there. I think that was one of those, Lance Von Erich episode was one of the things that they have to cut out to make it movie. Yeah.
Yeah. There was no way to do a good movie without streamlining it a little bit. I mean,
I'm sure this, you know, film that can be like the drama, TV drama series, this Iron Claw season one with 13 1-hour episodes or something. Still don't come. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lance Von Erich has a credit in the movie, you know. Lance, yeah. Actually has a credit in there. Also, he was credited as producer too.
Hmm.
You know. Maxwell Jacob Fried, you know, Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then he had this wig, you know. Now he later on in the movie where Kevin Von Erich standing in the corner, like thinking about something else, but the match was over. Oh, well, you know. So that was like later on because Lance Von Erich was created to pretend that he was a cousin. He wasn't, but you know what I'm saying? Then in the middle of this Lance, you know, the storyline, he left World Class to join another company or something. And Fritz Von Erich went on the press conference and said, there's no way he was our family. He introduced him as a cousin, you know, like a son of Waldo Von Erich or something, right? But that was like a turmoil, you know, period. Of this Von Erich thing. But overall, it was a very good movie, don't you think?
I think it was really well done.
Yeah.
I think it felt like one of the first real pieces of like artistic cinema or visual that treats wrestling with knowledge. It has knowledge, but it also has a lot of care into
for
the story. And the people that were involved, like the casting was fantastic. The casting was really let me pull back. I don't want to say it was fantastic completely, because some of the casting was amazing. When I say that, I'm talking about the people in the main story. There are other qualms I have that we'll get to, but in the big picture, some of these people were perfectly cast.
Also it wasn't documentary.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a documentary flick. You know, it's not a Dark Side of Wrestling. It's a movie, you know, Hollywood movie. And also the audience of general audience, movie audience. Of course, all the wrestling fans will watch it, but it was presented as a movie, Hollywood movie. And what was interesting at the beginning was like, usually that this caption says, based on true story, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this was inspired by true story. Yeah, so inspired. And the word in Japanese subtitles, it's the same actually, based on true story or inspired by true story. Japanese subtitle in Japanese theater, kind of same. But the word inspired was pretty important. Yeah. inspired.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's what they were trying to do. They're trying to tell a story.
It's a story about family, story about father and sons, of course, story about professional wrestling, and story about tragedy, of course, and somewhere that it's not all tragedy. At the end of the movie, it really showed in the clip that Kevin Von Erich and Pam has been married 40 years. If you have to watch all the way to the end roll, and it shows the real picture of Kevin and his family, and Kevin Von Erich and Pam has been married, you know, have been married 40 years, 4 kids and 13 grandchildren. It's like, it was saved. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So somewhere that it has to be more like inspired, you know, that in spite of this, the tragedies, that Kevin really survived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Those little two kids were that the Ross Von Erich and Marshall Von Erich, who worked for Pro Wrestling NOAH later on.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had credit, Marshall and Ross. It's like, those are the real characters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Two little boys and Kevin crying, you know? But it's like, hey, I'll be your brother. It's like, your son.
Yeah, it was very emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that all true? Like, brother, start dying, you know.
I mean, that's true. And the line, what does he say? He says,
I'm not even a brother anymore.
That's the line. That's the whole
he movie. Really said that in his real life.
That's right. Know? I think that it's so tragic. I think anybody like with a soul can relate.
Yeah. Pretty much like the first 20 minutes or 30 minutes into the movie, then girlfriend Pam asked Kevin Von Erich, is that your oldest brother syndrome thing? Then he really comes out and says, actually, I'm not even second oldest brother. They had Jack Jr. He died when he was 5. Then really, when the camera goes into Von Erich's family home, the big framed picture,
mm-hmm.
You know, all these brothers in there, but in the corner of this frame has a little kid's, you know, wallet size photo, stick it in there, like who isn't there? It's a Jack Jr.
Yeah. Mm.
And they really introduced that by not explaining it, by looking at the screen, saying, there must be another brother in there, you know, it's not there. The oldest brother who passed away young. And second time I noticed a lot of other things. The beginning of the film is black and white, you know, Fritz Von Erich, father doing he looks like Fritz Von Erich there.
He was maybe one of my favorite parts of the whole film.
He sounds like Von Erich.
Very convincing.
And tough Texas father, right? Yeah. And
he was amazing.
And after Fritz Von Erich finishes his match and come out of this, you know, arena, and two little kids, that's Kevin and David, right?
Hmm.
You know, meeting up father, and Doris, Fritz's wife, is pregnant in that film. You know, that's Carrie in her stomach.
Yeah. Hmm.
So that was very interesting. Then, you know, fast forward about 20 years, you're in the Texas home. Yeah. Yeah, but actually, it's a movie. It's a real good movie, but it's a movie, so they really condensed a lot of things. It made it look like Kevin Von Erich was, you know, like it was debuting in 1979. Actually, he debuted back in 77. You know, then brother David debuts 78. You know, and then Carrie Von Erich. Carrie Von Erich, the third brother. Actually, like a fourth brother in reality, but the third brother in the wrestling Von Erich brothers. Kerry Von Erich debuted in 1978. Did you know that? So it's not really that the Jimmy Carter, you know, boycotted Moscow Olympic in 1980 and he couldn't go to Olympic. Therefore, he became professional wrestler. That was a story that was given long, you know, for a long time, like a myth, you know. With this discus, that he will use this discus punch with his wrestling, you know, maneuvers, because he was a track runner and a discus thrower, and he was a junior Olympic, and he was in junior Olympic, that much true, and got the athletic scholarship and went to Houston University. And the story was that the president, then president Jimmy Carter, boycotted Moscow Olympic. Therefore, U.S. wouldn't go there. So he can't compete in Olympics. So he became wrestler. That was a story that was given 40 years ago, you know, but it was somewhat fantasy, but it, in the movie, it treated like how it was. Yeah. And it's amazing to rebuild this Dallas Sportatorium, you know, that burnt down, you know, some years back, you know, earth, you know, but they rebuilt Sportatorium, look just like Sportatorium. And you're a guitar player that you recognize song from Tom Petty. You recognize that? And some Rush songs. And was that a, you know, the Romeo and Juliet, that is that a Blue Oyster Cult?
I couldn't tell you on that one.
Okay, yeah, but that's such a, my high school rock and roll, you know, hit songs, you know, from late 70s into early 80s, I guess. And also it's all Southern rock, you know?
Mm.
And the actual song was in there. Well, it's like what people are listening, you know? And it's in Dallas, so some of the people actually wearing this, you know, 10-gallon cowboy hat and bell-bottom jeans, right? It's like really, it looks like, you know, it's like, if it wasn't a wrestling movie, it looks like an 80s movie. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
80s love story music, you know? And in that, it's a wrestling version of your Bohemian Rhapsody movie, or what's the Elton John one? The Rocket?
Rocket Man?
Yeah. It's like that. So it finally had wrestling, you know, version of Bohemian Rhapsody, and it really, really lived up to all the expectation. You know, we're wrestling fans, so we notice, you know, they skipped some of the historical moments, you know what I'm saying? That the event didn't happen accordingly, but remember that they portrayed David Von Erich, like, died in a ring accident or something in Japan,
mm-hmm.
You know, that the
stomach issue,
the blown up the
intestines.
Yeah. But actually, David Von Erich died in Japan before his, you know, like before the tour starts, the morning. That it was 1984, February 10th. The tour was starting, that he didn't even have first match there. You know, well, he had toured before that, mm-hmm. You know, and Kevin Von Erich and David Von Erich, you know, competed in Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling, and mm-hmm. They won the Asian Tag Team titles. Yeah. When they were like 20 probably. And that David Von Erich tour, he died, you know, that was going to be very, very important tour for David Von Erich. He, if you remember, he carried this United National UN title belt in his shoulder, right? With his name played on it, David Von Erich. All Japan Pro Wrestling, Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling, obviously had planned for David to have, see, they had, like 6-7 years before Triple Crown, there was Pacific Wrestling Federation PWF title, and there's the International Heavyweight title, and UN, United National Heavyweight title, three singles belt, and there was a Phantom title, you know, change, that they announced it, that the Michael Hayes and David Von Erich had a title match in Texas, and David Von Erich beat Michael Hayes to become UN champion. Then he came to Japan, and he was going to have a title match with Tenryu. It was Ric Flair against Jumbo Tsuruta, NWA world title match, and David Von Erich and Tenryu UN title match for that tour, which never happened, you know? And after David passed away, they brought in Ricky Steamboat right away, you know? And then they had Ricky Steamboat, Tenryu's UN title match, now vacant. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
Yeah. But they had nameplate David Von Erich on the belt, so they obviously had a plan. And this, you know, tour was very interesting. Brody was in there, you know, and Brody actually was one of the first person who found David that morning. Yeah. And it was Mrs. Baba that he couldn't, they shouldn't send David's, you know, body back to America all by himself. That there was Super Destroyer number one and number two, who was Bill Irwin and Scott Irwin, mm-hmm. who was working Dallas at the time. All Japan Company sent these two Irwin brothers, Bill Irwin and, you know, Scott Irwin, with David back to Dallas. You carry that body home. You know, technically, you could just send the body home, right? But they weren't, you know, weren't going to do that. That send Bill Irwin and Scott Irwin with David, then you guys come right back. Wow! So they did, you know, in a short period of time, they, you know, did the round trip twice, you know. And the Brody, well, that was in magazine, that the bro character, he crying and just kissed David, and that was all filmed in Japan. Yeah, it was in the regular news, and it was a newspaper that American popular star professional wrestler passed away rather mysteriously in hotel room in Japan. Yeah. Then 3 months later, that was Parade of Champions in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Texas Stadium, that the Kerry Von, then 24-year-old Kerry Von Erich going over on Ric Flair to be NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Yeah. And in the movie, they used the real footage. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And the TV screen, that wasn't the actor. They actually used the actual footage of Kerry Von Erich doing the backslide to beat Ric Flair. And so they didn't have that actor part. But after that, this NWA championship belt on the living room, you know, table. And they made it look like Kerry Von Erich took bike ride and got the accident that night.
Hmm.
Actually, Kerry Von Erich wouldn't have that the very fatal, you know, the motorcycle accident until June of 86, 2 years. You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
Yeah. And he had, you know, New Japan tour right before that, then had a motorcycle accident, and it was probably Fritz, you know, not to blame, but it was Fritz's, you know, decision to get Kerry back in the ring the very same year for the Thanksgiving night. They re-injured again. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Then, like rather miraculously, 1 year later in 87, Kerry walks back into the ring like nothing happened. He's walking in the ring. That's when he had the magic boots already. But the movie made it look like, you know, that he's getting out of bed, right? And then walking with crutch, then it's like his leg, you know, foot amputated. Yeah. But it was like a very much like wrestler knew, and the people close to the situation knew that he's, you know, he has this magic boots to work in the ring, but it wasn't really announced in the dressing room or anything like that. Yeah. And well, today's, you know, like you and I talked about that, you know, that the people in podcast that he was the biggest secret in wrestling industry. Nobody knew about it until he died. It actually, a lot of people knew, you know, that Kerry is working after his foot was amputated, but this magic boots, but that sounds dirty, right? What should I call it? His miracle boots, you know?
I don't know. This is kind of almost like a trap. I don't know what to say. What's PC? His cyborg supplemental boot thing.
And shortly after he started working with the boots, a lot of people started talking about a lot of things that Kerry Von Erich comes to building with the boots on. Kerry Von Erich takes shower with the boots on. You know, he goes back to hotel with the boots on. Somebody like, actually, it was late Scott Hall. He, you know, he knew the story, and during New Japan tour, Scott Hall and Kerry Von Erich talking to each other in the hallway. Kerry Von Erich, Scott Hall on purpose stepped on Carrie's boots, toe, stepped on it, right? Then Carrie didn't even notice, you know, Scott Hall stepped on his boot. It's like, because it's not there, right? It's like, then a lot of things. But actually, it was the one time, I believe it was, I wrote it down somewhere. Yeah, July of 88 in Las Vegas, AWA, you know, showboard, you know, AWA TV taping. They were doing AWA champion Jerry Lawler against WCCW World Class World Champion Kerry Von Erich, world title unification matches, if you remember. Yeah. And they did that more than once, you know, like a Super Clash one, a Super Clash two. They did that in Memphis. They did that in Dallas. They did that in, you know, Las Vegas, Chicago, all these places. And this July 88, Kerry Von Erich was having a single match against Colonel De Beers. Remember Colonel De Beers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. During that match, the boot came off. Then Kerry Von Erich rolled out of the ring real quick and put his foot underneath the apron. And they put the boots back on, came right back, and it worked. And people go, what did just happen? The boot came off, you know? And some people really saw that. But it was not really publicized, but it was like almost like a wrestling myth at the time. The boot came off, and Kerry Von Erich put his foot, you know, the leg underneath the, you know, ring apron, you know, on the head. Then he put the, you know, put the boot back on, then went right back to the ring. Yeah. So there was a lot of things. So, you know, it was like a well-kept secret, but a lot of people knew. Nonetheless, Kerry was able to work in the ring. With that boot, he was throwing drop kicks. You know, and with that boot, he was in WWE, Texas Tornado time. Mm-hmm. That was all that. And he won Intercontinental title with that. And he actually had, after that magic boot thing, Kerry Von Erich came back to New Japan and had regular match, you know. And also during WWE stint, WWE tenure, Kerry Von Erich and 20 other WWE superstars had the three different tours in 1992. 1991 was SWS, Super World Sports Ten Rules Group. At the time, SWS and Our Magazine, Weekly Pro Wrestling was like, Our Magazine was banned from SWS, you know? So I wasn't able to officially go to the matches, but when WWE guys, you know, the whole 20 WWE superstar came to Japan. I went to see my friend Mike, Road Warrior Hawk. At the time, Legion of Doom, right? Hawk, you know. So I went to Akasaka Prince Hotel to meet with Hawk. And Kerry Von Erich came with him. And it's amazing. It's two superstars from two different territories, you know. It's like big superstars on their own, you know. But actually, when they were working in WWE, Mike, Hawk, Road Warrior Hawk, Legion of Doom Hawk, and Kerry Von Erich, Texas Tornado, they became best friends. Yeah. That was very, very interesting. And so that was the time he already had that magic boots period. So he must have worked like 5 years with that. Yeah. Until the day he decided to go. Yeah.
I saw him when I was a kid at the first ever wrestling show that I went to.
Oh, the live?
Yeah.
And was the Buffalo, New York?
No, it was Albany, New York.
Albany, New York, yeah.
It was a new arena called the Knickerbocker Arena.
Knickerbocker Arena, okay.
Which is now, it was the Pepsi Arena, and it was the, I think it's now the Times Union Center. No, sorry, it's MVP arena now. It's where the International Hall of Fame is. International Wrestling Hall of Fame is. Okay. And that's where I saw Kerry Von Erich. He was called Texas Tornado.
Texas Tornado at the time, yeah.
Yes.
What was the main event?
Okay. So this was, I'm sure this.
Was that 91, 92?
Yeah, 91, 92. This really informs my fandom. The main event was supposed to be Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan.
Okay. Hogan, after WrestleMania 7 then, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Or before?
Maybe before. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
But the Gulf War time.
I think it was after. It was after, but they were still doing the program.
Still doing it. You're right. Right.
But he knows he didn't show up. Well, it did happen with Sergeant Slaughter and the local hero, Hacksaw Jim Duggan from Glens Falls, New York.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And I remember buying the foam 2x4.
Foam 2x4? Yeah. Okay. But
yes. Texas Tornado was the Intercontinental Champion and had a match with Mr. Perfect.
Oh, that sounds good, actually. Yeah.
It was great. And one of the best matches, I'll never forget, it was maybe the second match, Ricky Steamboat versus Haku.
Doesn't sound all that great on paper, but
like a six-year-old kid, and he blew the fire and everything, and martial arts.
Yeah.
It was pretty mind-blowing for me as a young kid. Oh, we could talk about that another time, but let's get back to talking about Von Erichs.
The movie, yeah, Von Erichs, yeah. Yeah. So the movie made it look like the night after he won the NWA World Heavyweight title from Ric Flair, he took a motorcycle and got accident. It actually wasn't that night. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It like 2 years later, he didn't get his motorcycle accident until like summer of '86. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he tried to come back too soon and got injured again. But 1 year later, he came like a new guy, after the amputation, right? Mm-hmm. And he started walking in the ring just fine, Yeah. But the movie actually was it was 80s feeling, and not every wrestling has to be WWE, you know what I'm saying? It was Dallas. They talked about the Texas heavyweight title and also the world heavyweight champion, National Wrestling Alliance, NWA. They come from Missouri, they call it, So St. Louis, and actually during the movie, Fritz Von Erich talk about Sam Machinik, right?
Yeah,
from St. Louis. Yeah, so the champion, NWA champion, come from St. Louis, right? But to bring that world heavyweight title to my home, like Dallas, and they didn't touch upon that. But 1975, Fritz Von Erich was president of NWA for one term, actually, yeah, and yeah. So NWA emphasis was interesting because it's not, it's not that important if you weren't a wrestling fan, But they really used the like a really historical actual fact that the territories from St. Louis to Dallas, Texas, that they're the membership, of National Wrestling Alliance, that the traveling world champion come to your town kind of thing. Mm. And that the actor who did the Hardy Race was really good, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. He was big belly. One of my other favorites. Yeah. Hardy Race was very good. The Ric Flair, I don't know about. I was
like a flaky. Yeah.
I didn't understand that. And I mean, Bruce Brody was such a big part of the story, but I understand you got to make certain choices.
The movie was a little bit longer, but then you have to have the whole episode on Bruiser Brody.
So
but they did have Bruiser Brody in there, like going over High Spot.
Yeah.
Because this is not a wrestling movie. I mean, it's, of course, like I said, wrestling fans will be watching it, but the most people will be watching this as a movie. Mm-hmm. And that the two tag teams that are fighting that night, they're going over High Spot. You do this and do that and double drop kick and this and that. Yeah, they'll come in and you do this and do that. They almost have to have that kind of scene.
It's for storytelling.
Also, general understanding and general perception of what professional wrestling is.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't really hurt, because there was a scene where then girlfriend Pam asked Kevin, but that's all showbiz, right? And then Kevin straight up said, but you get reward. You do well at your job. And I'm now Texas heavyweight champion and I want to be world heavyweight champion. I mean, serious, Yeah. And then Kevin Von Erich, on all the Von Erich talk like that about business too. I did the interview with Kevin Von Erich. Kerry Von Erich and Mike Von Erich. I spoke with them. I did not meet David, but it was like they really actually, when they withdrew from NWA, they created World Class World Heavyweight Title, of course. But at the time, when they were a member of NWA, National Wrestling Alliance, it is really hard for them to actually have world title in Dallas. You know what I'm saying? So it was real, you know, pretty real. That part has to be in that movie. The Fritz Von Erich, former, you know, superstar wrestler, now the owner of wrestling company in Dallas and promoter and producer and like playing favorite among brothers. And it was, do you remember this, the kitchen eating, you know, the dining tables? And the Fritz Von Erich saying, my favorite is David, Kevin, and Kerry, and Mike, but that order can change if you work hard. It's so cruel to rank brothers, right? But Kevin Von Erich personally told me that, actually. My dad play favorite. Yeah. That sometimes it's David, and it was David, and then now it's Kerry. And Kevin Von Erich told me in person that he likes to be number two. It's a good position. Number two. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So David went to different territory, like NWA Florida, you know? And with WWE, Kerry Von Erich's Texas Tornado toured all over the world. Kevin Von Erich didn't really travel. You know, he really stayed in Texas. Yeah. But he knew this, you know, like oldest brother type of thing. Not actually older brother, but the oldest in those four brothers, that he want to be number two and stay there, you know? And yeah, he really knew how to play that, you know, father's game. That's why this movie was really good. This movie is relationship, special relationship between Fritz, father, and Kevin. Of course, there must have been a relationship between Fritz and David, Fritz and Kerry, and Fritz and Mike. And obviously, the Mike was portrayed real good in this movie that made it look like, no, I don't want to wrestle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did not want to be a wrestler, but he had to, kind of thing. And yeah. Because Mike took his own life, you know? And David thing was really, really shocking. The first losing oldest brother, Jack Jr., so young, tragedy, you know? And David died when he was 25 on the other side of the world, in Japan. Then Fritz Von Erich was father, but also promoter mind that he really used tragedy to make Texas Stadium Parade of Champion the biggest wrestling event of all time. You know, that's the beginning of this turmoil of tragedy, don't you think? That when the night Kerry Von Erich won the NWA title from Kerry Von Erich, it was not in movie, but they raised the price of all the merchandise. You know, like a Von Erich t-shirt, Von Erich baseball cap and everything. They raised the price and made a lot of money. And we didn't really think much about it, you know, much about it at the time. But something was like really spinning, you know. And actually, Kevin Von Erich, this movie was portrayed actually through Kevin's vision, right? You know, not because he is the only surviving, you know, who made it through and he lived. But actually, there was one time that Kevin Von Erich almost died. Did you know that?
Tell me about it.
Yeah, Kevin Von Erich almost died in Sportatorium ring in, I'd say, 91 or 92, the Sportatorium, you know, and stop breathing, no pulse or whatever. And then, if you remember Fantastics, Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton, the small guys, but super, super, super talented.
Extremely talented.
They used to come to Old Japan, you know, early 90s as in a regular.
Awesome tag.
Yeah. They were working World Class Dallas at the time. Tommy Rogers jumped in the ring and gave Kevin Von Erich CPR. you know. Then survive, you know, Kerry Von Erich, you know, woke up and survived, you know. And the reason Tommy Rogers was able to do so was that he was a lifeguard at the swimming pool, you know, at one point. Tommy Rogers jumped in the ring and saved Kevin's life. That part wasn't in the movie, yeah. And yeah, because Kevin, this movie couldn't be made without Kevin's vision, right? And so he wasn't all that safe either, you know? That's what I'm saying. Mm. Yeah. And the order was that, you know, Jack Jr. passed away. Kevin Von Erich passed away. Then Mike, it was 92, I believe. Mike actually took his own life in like 87, right after Kerry Von Erich's first motorcycle accident. Yeah. Then 4 years later in 91, Chris Von Erich shot himself in heart with his pistol, you know. The youngest brother, you know, he was only 21, but he was not in movie. And some people already asked this movie director, why wasn't Chris in that movie? And it says, way too tragic. And if he covered this, you know, Chris Von Erich episode, you cannot finish the movie. You know what I'm saying? Way too tragic. So it treated just Kevin and David and Kerry and Mike. There was a movie, yeah. So Chris is not in it. But at the very end of the end roll, you know, in memory of David and Kerry and Mike and Chris and Doris, mother. And so they gave credit to, at the very end of the movie, in the end roll, you have to sit through all the credit and the director and everybody. And the very end of the movie, they show photos of Kevin Von Erich and his actual families, right? Mm-hmm. And there was in memory of David and Kerry and Mike and Chris and Doris in there. So they really covered it, yeah. But the movie did not carry Chris's episode or Gino Hernandez's episode or Brody's episode or Chris Adams' episode. That's way too much, right? Yeah.
That's right. There wasn't a territory like that.
But it was like, as a movie, it gets spiritual at didn't happen like that, but Kerry shot himself, that the just Nick at time, it didn't make it, but Kevin Von Erich went to, you know, parents' house and find Kerry. But in the fantasy part, Kerry Von Erich's walking with his foot on, then being on the boat. It's like a Japanese, almost like a Japanese Buddhist metaphor that you go over that river, you go into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sanzu no Kawa, and that he actually, you know, rode the boat. And on the other side, edge of the water, David and Kerry, you know, Mike, all waving, hey, come over, right? Then they actually brothers reunite and even meet up. Like the oldest brother he never even met, the five-year-old Jack Jr., then they really, you know, reunite. It's a fantasy part, but that really saved the movie.
The ending. The movie was good, but the ending made the movie really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Really tied it together.
All these people just died, and it's the end of the movie. You have to have something that, you know, give you the feeling that it was a good movie, and I'm glad I watched it. It was a tragedy, but it was somewhere that, like, some heartwarming moment or something, yeah. And also, now that the Kevin, I used to be a brother. I mean, I used to have a lot of brothers. I'm not even a brother anymore. And young little kid Marshall and Ross came in, you know, comfort his father. And it was a great ending of the movie. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And, I want people to watch it. You know, it's not just wrestling movie. It's probably best movie that dealt with wrestling. Mickey Rourke, the wrestler, was pretty good, but it was like tragic, you know, pretty tragic too, you know, but it was fictional, you know, and single, you know, the wrestler who used to be superstar, but still wrestling, you know, and it's like almost like a graveyard of wrestlers, you know, signing autograph and all these things, you know, 80s wrestler 20 years later. Mickey Rourke's movie was good. There was quite a few other wrestling movies, but not nearly as good as this one. Yeah.
I can't think of any.
Paradise Alley, that the Sylvester Stallone and Terry Funk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a Paradise Alley, but they dealt in 1930s wrestling, you know.
But this had a lot going on, a lot of positives. They really, and guys like Zac Efron changing their body so much for the role, or.
Yeah, and then the hairdo is just like 1970s Kevin Von Erich, and barefooted, of course, you know. And they did the wrestling scene real good, too.
Yeah.
Loved the Fabulous Freebirds, especially Terry Gordy, the person who did the Terry Gordy. He did pretty good, you know?
Right, right.
Curly hair and all that, yeah.
You know, on this topic, it's an aside, but have you ever seen or are you familiar with the movie called Highlander?
Highlander.
From maybe 1987, 86? Christopher Lambert.
Okay.
It was like a sword fantasy, urban fantasy movie.
Oh, okay.
I bring it up because I watched it again recently. It's not the greatest movie in the world, but the beginning of the movie, the opening scene, I believe it's in the sportatorium, and Fabulous Freebirds are in a match against Tonga Kid and someone else who I forgot. But
somebody like King Parsons, somebody like that.
I think it was King Parsons, actually.
King Parsons, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was.
Iceman King Parsons is a big character in the world class. You know, it wasn't in the movie, but you know, him, Kamala, you know, the original John Kamala, great Kabuki at the time. Yeah. And a lot of Dallas superstars there. So that was Iceman King Parsons?
I believe so. I have to go back and double check, but I bring it up just to, I mean, that shows you how. Almost, I guess, mainstream, you could say, the company was at the time. It shows how big it was in a certain area. It's hard to explain because, you know, territories, it was communicating with people.
World Class was big non-WWF company that was on like a Christian channel that happened to go into all kinds of different cities on cable channels. Mm-hmm. I lived in Minneapolis at the time. You know, between 79 and 84, I was able to watch World Class Dallas in like a channel 23. It's like a UHF channel that you just kind of work on. It's like, I can watch Dallas now. And I was able to watch Dallas wrestling from Minnesota. Yeah.
I was only able to begin watching it in New York when it merged and was on ESPN.
They did that. Yeah.
It wasn't the same. It was Global Wrestling Federation.
GWF. Oh, after that. Oh, this movie really had a scene that Kevin Von Erich decided to sell the company to Jerry Jarrett.
Yeah.
You know?
I thought that was a good detail.
Yeah. And that's like nobody sitting in this old, you know, beat up, you know, sportatorium. And the person looks like Jerry Jarrett, you know? Yeah, it was good. You know, so Kevin Von Erich was wrestler, but Kevin Von Erich, also a part owner of the company, was doing the company, you know, office work. And Fritz did not want to sell the company. That's true too, you know, but it was a time to sell. And it was interesting at the time. Memphis, Tennessee company and Dallas, Texas company actually merged, you know. Yeah. And wrestlers are flying in from Memphis to Dallas every weekend, and it was only $35 flight. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So they, wrestlers going back and forth, Tennessee, and like a 1-hour flight, right? But it was interesting. Actual Tennessee wrestlers, Jerry Lawler, Jerry Jarrett, you know, crew, they always traveled to Dallas, Texas, and actually worked to Sportatorium. And Sportatorium had this greasy French fries. I had to. And you had to eat that really greasy French fry when you're there. Yeah. So it was interesting. So, GWF, Global Wrestling, was Pedicino. What's his name?
Joe Pedicino.
Yeah, Joe Pedicino ran the company then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So So they didn't put, you know, have that part. So like an end of world class, you know.
Yes, yes.
And for Kevin, it was interesting that he did not choose this, you know, wrestling as his career. For Kevin, it was like the summer job that happened to last 18 years. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he thought it was going to be just summer job, that I'll get in the ring and wrestle and don't know what to do with life, you know. But that was a summer job that happened to last 18 years. And Kevin, like, really free spirit, huh?
Mm.
Yeah. Because David had a different pressure. He was sent to different territory, Florida. And also, he was a very good candidate of NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I'm talking about David.
Mm.
Like, great candidate to be next NWA World Heavyweight Champion after Ric Flair. Like, they were thinking, you know, Hardy Race into Ric Flair. And who's after Ric Flair? David Von Erich or Ted DiBiase or somebody like that, right? And David was the one who went, you know, went to outside of Dallas and went to NWA Florida and experienced heel for the first time.
Mm.
See, when you were in Dallas, Texas, David, Kerry, or of course Kevin, everybody's like just baby face. That's it, right? So when you go to different territory, you have to become heel. Then David did that. And in Japan, what was interesting, that like 87 tag team, Antonio Inoki, Kevin Von Erich against young Keiji Muto and Kengo Kimura.
Hmm.
Inoki and Kevin Von Erich as a tag team beat younger Keiji Muto and Kengo Kimura. Yeah. That was very interesting. Yeah.
That speaks volumes of Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Kevin Von Erich, main event guy, obviously. But he just did not have this drive to be world heavyweight champion and carry the company. He was more like easy going, right?
Mm.
But it was actually Brody, you know. People, you know, were surprised. See, February of 84, David Von Erich passed away in Japan. Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. And Mr. and Mrs. Baba took such good care of this, you know, casket, and send, you know, David home with, you know, care. But very next year, 85, world-class Fritz Von Erich's world-class championship wrestling, the company signed the partnership deal with Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling. They were like, didn't they have a relationship with Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling? That was the year, actually, Bruiser Brody switched from Baba to Inoki. And Bruiser Brody was like in the middle, you know, he didn't want to, you know, make it, you know, himself look like negotiating for this company, you know, like a company, you know, negotiation and a business partnership and stuff like that. But it was obviously Bruiser Brody and Antonio Inoki that made New Japan and world class a partnership. That was the year that the New Japan and WWF, you know, broke off, you know, from this previous business partnership. You know, Vince McMahon, 1985, first WrestleMania, they were set to go conquer the world, right? Vince McMahon stopped sending, you know, all the WWE superstar to New Japan and no more of that, right? Then New Japan needed to sign the deal, you know, deal with big company in America. There was Dallas World Class. That when you say Dallas World Class, you gotta have Kevin Von Erich and Kerry Von Erich and Mike even toward Japan, and people like Brody was always there, but Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer, the Chris Adams, the a lot of wrestlers came from Dallas to New Japan Ring that year on. Yeah, but it was like, wow, Giant Baba took care, you know, took such good care of David, but they. Very next year, they switched affiliation. So that was like a little bit of like a shocking thing.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah. So Inoki came to the end of 85 and, you know, and then part of 86. Anthony Inoki himself came to Dallas and wrestled. And Fujinami came. And before he was Great Muta, Keiji Muto actually had, yeah, like, was that a Black Ninja or the Super Ninja?
Super Black Ninja. I think that was a
something
Puerto
like
Rico.
That. Yeah, it wasn't even Great Muta yet, but basic same gimmick. Yeah, yeah. By the time Keiji Muto as a Super Black Ninja worked Dallas, Dallas was not what it used to be. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he traveled the very same next July, Flash of Champions, the NW Crockett debuted Great, you know, Muta's Great Muta. Yeah. So, but he did, Keiji Muto did spend some time in Dallas. There was like a, of course, Great Kabuki was born in Dallas, you know, early 80s, like 81. Then active Fritz Von Erich getting older, but then active babyface older Fritz Von Erich against Great Kabuki main event, you know, and Magic Dragon, Haru Sonoda, and also Killer Khan spent the time in Dallas too. Yeah.
What about Kendo Nagasaki?
Kendo Nagasaki came in a little bit, but actually, Great Kabuki and Kendo Nagasaki never worked in the same place, same time, but the same gimmick, right? Yeah. So I think they respected each other. When Kabuki's there, when Great Kabuki's there, Kendo Nagasaki wouldn't come in. When Great Kabuki's gone, Kendo Nagasaki will come in. It's basic, same character, right? Mm-hmm. And after that, Torayatsu, Yoshiaki Yatsu, came in as a Torayatsu. Tora, at the time, now they're showing the same movie 45 years later, but there was a Japanese samurai movie. You know, it was so big. It's called Shogun, if you remember.
Yeah, there's a new show, a remake.
Not this one, though.
Yeah,
like 45 years later. But
1980 the
original. Yeah, 1980 original Shogun with Toranaga. So they named Yatsu Tora Yatsu, and they had Yatsu against Great Kabuki babyface system, Japanese against Japanese in Dallas. So a lot of Japanese wrestlers came. You know, went through this Dallas, you know, they stayed a year at a time. And also Fritz Von Erich, the original Fritz Von Erich, toured Japan eight times during his time, between 1966 to his last tour being 1979, he accompanied then first appearance, Bruiser Brody. That was Fritz Von Erich's last tour to Japan, January of 1979. That was a tour for Bruiser Brody's very first tour with Japan. So there was like a passing a torch thing. Yeah. And useless trivia, but Fritz Von Erich's very first tour, 1966, that was the very first match they held at Budokan. Yeah. Giant Baba's international heavyweight title, biggest, you know, superstar from America, challenger Fritz Von Erich, very first show they held at the Nippon Budokan. 1966 was the year when Beatles toured Japan and had very first concert at the Budokan.
Wow.
Yeah, so the same 1966. Useless trivia, but very historical, right? Yeah. And also, like 1971, when Fritz Von Erich came to Japan, he challenged both Baba's international heavyweight title and Antonio Inoki's UN title separately. Same, you know, we were thinking that as a kid, Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki, two stars in the same company. It was before All Japan or New Japan. JWA, Japan Pro Wrestling, international champion Giant Baba, UN, United National Singles Champion Antonio Inoki. Wow, why do they have two singles titles, right? And Fritz Von Erich came in and challenged each, Baba and Inoki. So we had to kind of use Von Erich, you know, to see Baba's better than Inoki or Inoki's better than Baba. And Von Erich was there, like a huge superstar.
One of the original.
So that was my childhood memory.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
then, that was 71. That was 71. 70? Then 1972, Inoki opens New Japan and Baba opens All Japan. Then pretty soon JWA went down.
Next chapter.
So Von Erich was, I can say, big part of Japanese wrestling history too.
Seems like it, yeah. So I'm hoping that a lot of old and new Japanese wrestling fans see the movie and get a new perspective. And
yeah, because we talk about Von Erich and Kerry Von Erich and David Von Erich and Michael Von Erich, all these things, just like yesterday. But it was like 35, 40 years ago, you know? Yeah. For today's fan, Von Erich's all ancient, huh?
I mean, the movie is quite popular. I think that it's really brought the name back a lot this year. But in general, I'm going to assume that somebody that's in their teens or 20s isn't that interested in, you know, it's from a while ago.
Movie that just to watch that movie.
It's great.
If you study the history, you get more out of it, of course. A lot more out of it. But just the general audience movie, you sit and eat popcorn or something, and you watch as a movie, still a real good movie.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
I think it pays a lot of respect to pro wrestling, too.
And inspired by true story. So that inspires a lot of audience. Is this true story? Oh, my gosh, right? Yeah. And there was like a few times in the 90s and 2000 that you know, people tried to make a movie of Von Erichs. It never happened. But this director was the one who insisted, we'll make this movie, in Hollywood budget, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And really good movie. And Zac Efron did real well, you know, doing the Kevin Von Erich. All the wrestling part, the wrestling scene was all pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They proved that you could do a really good wrestling movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you could explore a lot of different ways to tell a story or different stories.
And
to tell.
And then the actual pain and actual glory and real feeling of people who are involved, you know? If you don't like wrestling, it's all show business. Wrestling is so fake. It's not as simple, you know? This movie helps understand that, I think. Yeah. Real good movie. So
check it out.
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to open the first week of April in Japan. And a lot of people writing good thing about, you know, this Von Erich movie now, you know. And hope a lot of people get to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have to do this again later this year when the Dump Matsumoto series is on Netflix.
Netflix. And also Mayu Iwatani's movie come out too.
Oh, is that on Netflix too?
No, it's like a theatrical movie.
Wow. Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah. It's a runaway wrestler because she ran away from home. Yeah, yeah. So it's two different kinds. And I have friends who sat in the Korakuen Hall as extra, you know, as a being audience. And Dump Matsumoto's part was, it's like guys, late 70s into early 80s as a scene, right? All the extra was told to tuck your t-shirt in. I mean, today's kids, you know, you leave your shirt out, right?
Sure.
But in the 80s, all the audience, you tuck your shirt in. Yeah, so it's like everybody in the audience, you know? Yeah. Don't have that ponytail. Nobody had that ponytail in the 80s, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they made sure. And they gave everybody big bento, you know?
Oh, good. That's good.
Yeah. So it's good to sit all day, though, because when you participate as an extra in a movie, they make you sit all day, you know? Yeah, but this friend of mine just had a real great time. He did the extra on both movies, Iwatani movie and Dump Matsumoto movie.
Wow.
Real fan, huh? Yeah. But it's like, it's good to have wrestling movies, you know? You know, not just for the popularity of it, but it helps, you know, people understand wrestling a lot deeper. Yeah.
Wrestling is very complex, so it's hard to, they did a good job telling the story in this movie. And even then, there's still so much more to the story in real life.
Yeah.
So it did a good job of proving
it's
how
easy to say wrestling is all show business and it's a phony and fake and all these things. It's not. What's the difference? Real world out there is the stuff you see in regular, you know, something other than wrestling, they are just as phony. They are just as fake. And this world is full of prejudice, This world is full of stereotypes, you know? And you really have to be really focused, you know? Yeah. And this is pretty realistic.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap it then. All right.
Okay.
Okay. So until next time for the Iron Claw. Very good.
And this championship belt is really good.
It looks great.
Texas Heavyweight. It's Iron Claw in katakana.
Yeah.
Iron Claw in katakana. Is that good though?
Mm-hmm. Where can you be found?
Fumi Saito on Facebook at Fumihiko Dayo, FumihikoDayo, Fumihiko Dayo on X Twitter. Mm-hmm. Or Instagram, Fumi Saito 2001.
And on X. I'm at Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER. And you can email us at thisiswritethatdown@gmail.com.
Yeah, and then also we were going to answer a lot of questions, but well, let's have this answer question episode next time.
Sure. We'll do question answers. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, until next time.
So long from Tokyo.